You're listening to the Broadway Podcast Network.
Hey guys, it is Ryan. I'm not sure if you know this about me, but I'm a bit of a fun fanatic when I can. I like to work, but I like fun too. It's a thing. And now the truth is out there. I can tell you about my favorite place to have fun. Chumba Casino. They have hundreds of social casino style games to choose from with new games released each week. You can play for free anytime, anywhere. And each day brings a new chance to collect daily bonuses. So join me in the fun. Sign up now at ChumbaCasino.com.
No purchase necessary. VGW. Void or prohibited by law. See terms and conditions. 18 plus.
Okay, round two. Name something that's not boring.
A laundry? Ooh, a book club. Computer solitaire, huh?
Ah, oh, sorry. We were looking for Chumba Casino.
That's right. ChumbaCasino.com has over 100 casino-style games. Join today and play for free for your chance to redeem some serious prizes.
ChumbaCasino.com. No purchase necessary. Void where prohibited by law. 18 plus. Terms and conditions apply. See website for details.
Hello, and welcome to another fabulous episode of Dear Multi-Hyphenate. I'm your host, Michael Kushner, and I'm so excited that you're joining me for the 59th episode. I think that is so wild that there are 59 episodes of Dear Multi-Hyphenate, and what's so interesting is if you listen to the first episodes, it's pre-pandemic, and now so many of the conversations are dominated by what we've learned about ourselves in this pandemic, how the industry has shifted. That's the word. Am I okay? Hello. I'm so happy and ecstatic about the conversations I've been able to have, made new friends. And if you want to share your story, if you want to come on the podcast, follow me at Dear Multi-Hyphenate on Instagram or submit on my website, dearmultihyphenate.com. Fill out a form. Let me know what you want to talk about. I love meeting new people. And if you love this podcast, please rate, subscribe, comment, share with your friends and family. I just got a new review on Apple Podcasts from Joseph B., who says, "It's excellent for creative people," and gave me 5 stars. Michael Kushner curates lovely conversations with amazing guests. Importantly, he gives people room to speak. Thank you for saying that, because it's very important to me. For those who do many creative things, particularly but not necessarily in the arts, this podcast is a fabulous resource that shows we're not alone, that there are indeed others out there wired and inclined as we are. Thank you so much for saying that. That means the world. And please, if you feel so inclined, leave a review and rate, subscribe. It really does help. And if you follow on Instagram, I'm starting to do community care posts, ways that we don't just hold ourselves accountable, but hold our community accountable. And this one that I'm going to share is inspired by my dear friend, Ashley Kate Adams, who talks about this all the time and is the author of Be Your Own Producer. So make sure you check out that book and also our episode under Multi-Hyphenate. But if you're asking to go to coffee, pay for the artist coffee. And speaking of coffee, coffee is a lovely gesture. Bring your coach, photographer, stylist, whoever, their favorite order, because it'll make their day. But it is not a proper exchange of services. Coffee should never be used as payment for someone's art, insight, and services. If you want to take an artist out to coffee, great, but pay them for their time. If you're an artist looking for the insight of another artist, please compensate them. Social dates are, of course, great, but are you just using this time to get something out of them? What is your motivation? If you're an artist and someone asks you for a coffee date, please make sure it is worth your time. I have been to many coffee dates where the artist picking my brain doesn't even pay for the coffee. Yes, that is true. Now, is that fair? Probably not. But you are the person who gets to decide how to spend their time. So please make sure that when you're spending time with someone else, that it is an exchange. It's not just a give and take. It has to be an exchange. Multi-hyphenates. Our time is precious. So please make sure it is an exchange. I hope everyone had a Valentine's Day. If you subscribe to corporate holidays such as that, but my boyfriend and I had a lovely time. We brought our puppy to the new hotel, Civilian Hotel in Hell's Kitchen. It is the first Broadway-themed hotel in Hell's Kitchen, designed by Tony winner David Rockwell. It is really, really beautiful and incredible. and it's puppy friendly, which is so important. And their lounge is fabulous, with adorned with photos of backstage, dressing rooms, celebrities, performances. And in one of the rooms, there's this incredible exhibit behind glass doors. Idina's original Elphaba hat, Natasha Richardson's Don't Tell Mama outfit, Cheetah Rivera's Kiss of the Spider Woman shoes. I mean, it was really incredible. So check it out. That's Civilian Hotel. And do a little nice staycation if you're in New York City. Do a nice little staycation like we did. But if you're out of town, book your hotel there. And that way, when you're done seeing your Broadway shows, the Broadway night does not end there. I don't think you'll regret it. It's pretty incredible. Anyway, let's get on with this episode. Enough talking. Well, this is all talking, so more talking, but just let's move on. Am I right? Okay. Brian Jordan Jr. This episode is so great. I'm so excited for you to learn more about him. Brian Jordan Jr. is a classically trained actor, singer, and dancer who studied at NYU's Tisch School of the Arts and the Debbie Allen Dance Academy. He has performed in Broadway national tours, off-Broadway, and in many of the country's most prestigious regional theaters before turning to television and film. He recently released a new upbeat motivational R&B track that encourages listeners to believe in themselves. He is currently starring in Tyler Perry's Sistas and has written two projects, one being a movie called Georgia Sky and the other being a musical called Riley. I really hope you enjoy this episode and talk to you soon. Enjoy.
Hi, Brian. How are you?
What's up, buddy? I'm well. How are you?
I'm so glad that our mutual press rep introduced us so that we could talk.
Yeah. So excited, man. We've been trying for so long.
I know. I think the first time that it happened, you were in the middle of moving?
Yes.
So where were you moving from? Where did you move to?
From LA to Atlanta.
Oh, okay. So this is great. So I love talking about different places in which art can happen. So, you know, I think people think it's just a bi-coastal thing. You're in New York, you're in LA, you're in New York, you're in LA. What drew you to Atlanta? Why did you end up in Atlanta?
Oh, wow. Well, I've actually been everywhere. So I started in New York, actually. And, when I left New York, I went to Atlanta first, because of I wanted to transform or, you know, transition to a TV and film from theater. And I felt like Atlanta would be easier for me to get jobs because the film industry there was just kind of, this was like 2016. And so it was just beginning its boom. And so I felt that I would, you know, it would be more easy for me to book. That kind of happened, but not the way that I thought it would. And so then I was like, I'm leaving. I left Atlanta in like under a year and I went to LA. Mm-hmm. And I found some success in LA after some struggle, of course. But moving to Atlanta happened because I am on a television show that films in Atlanta. I'm a regular on a show, and which is great. I mean, I'm celebrating my fourth season right now, and the real estate in Atlanta is great. And I'm kind of getting to the point of like, maybe I should purchase real estate and be like an adult. And right. So that's what really moved me here. And also Atlantis, I mean, they shoot 60% of TV and film here now. And so it's so much work. I literally moved to LA from Atlanta to book a job to come to Atlanta.
Wow.
That's what it was. And so I think that sometimes Atlanta gets like pushed out of the conversation, but Atlanta is huge. There is a huge, and this may get too technical or economic, but it's a huge tax credit when you film here. And so a lot of filming happens here.
I'm all about the technicality. In my upcoming book, I have a whole section about figuring out, especially after the pandemic, right, when so much has been moved virtually, figuring out the place that works for you. Like New York and LA, while I love New York and I'm a New Yorker, I was born in Long Island and, you know, can't move to Florida, grew up in Florida. I was in New York all the time and this is where my family is and, you know, there's and this is where Broadway is. So, you know, New York is for me, but what if, you know, what if I wasn't, you know, so obsessed with the Broadway community?
Yeah.
Do I have to be here? Could I do something elsewhere? So, you know, in the book, I have insight from people in North Carolina, from people in Miami, from people in DC. Cause all of these different theater and art towns, they're so, they're same, but different. You know what I mean? Mm-hmm. Like where everyone has a common goal of creating and doing and existing, but there are things that make each city different. So for Atlanta, hearing about the tax cut, I mean, tell us more about Atlanta. Tell us more about why you think maybe people should move to Atlanta and explore their artistry there.
Yeah, I think that I would always recommend Atlanta for someone at the beginning of their career, especially if they want to have the duality of, you know, TV, film, and theater. Mm-hmm. Light on the theater, though, if I can be honest, the theater here isn't fantastic, but New York is an hour flight away.
Right.
And that is the best part about Atlanta. It's on the same coast. I always say it's the same time zone. And so when you are like I'll be traveling to New York tomorrow for a premiere that I think that you guys were just talking about. Like I'll be going to that opening and I'm just getting on a flight in the morning and I'll be there, you know? And that's been great for me when it comes to working in New York, because I've been able to I work in New York locally because I have a place there, but if I didn't, I would still be able to work locally. It's just a quick flight. Atlanta is a place where the cost of living is significantly cheaper than LA and New York. And I think that it's when you are at the beginning of your career and trying to figure out things, where you belong and how to market yourself and where you fit and learning the people and learning the casting offices, especially in this time of virtual everything, I think that Atlanta is the place to be because it's still growing, which means that you won't lose all, like spend all your money, but it's growing rapidly, which means that there is opportunity.
Atlanta might be a good place to try out something new with yourself if you're a younger artist or a newer artist. So where did you go to school?
I went to undergrad at LSU.
Amazing.
And then to graduate school at the Tisch School. I was in New York for 4 years.
Wow, good.
And so just to be honest, after I quit grad school, because we didn't quite get through, it was tough. Man, I lost a fellowship and couldn't afford to pay for it, but I lived in New York for 4 years and I did the circuit. I did the regional theater, did the workshops. And I moved to Atlanta I moved to New York in 12 and to Atlanta in 16.
I want to talk to you about quitting because I have an interesting relationship with failure and also putting myself first. Like, and I feel like we're conditioned in this industry that anytime we have to do something for ourselves or because of a circumstance, when we put ourselves first or make a tough decision, it's hard to sort of control the narrative or to sort of people please. Have you run into that? Like when you have to put yourself first, like was there ever an instance?
Probably every day.
Yeah.
You know what I find, especially through therapy, and really doing the work to be able to fully foster like what I have and understand, I guess understand the alignment of my passion with like my reality. I learn that at its core, this industry is literally about other people. But what drives us to do the work is all about us. And so it's a conflict. It's a conflict that makes no sense at all. And I also have to accept that because you can't make sense of it. However, I believe that the only way to use yourself or have yourself as a vessel to be able to put forth any art is by taking care of yourself.
Mm-hmm.
And so then we have to like deal with balance, mm-hmm. Which is difficult because so many times in my life I have, you know, you go all this time trying to get things and also being an object for people to either enjoy or not, to say yes or no, to continue to work with or not, to pay you or not, to determine if you'll eat or not, like those type of things. And it's very difficult to say, I this is how I feel, because it kind of feels like it doesn't matter,
mm-hmm.
In a lot of times. And so with that, you know, situation that you were dealing with, I can fully identify and sympathize with it, because there's been so many times where people see me as revolutionary because I am the one who's going to stand up and say things. I'm the one that's like, no, like I'm that guy. Mm-hmm. And I think that in the beginning of my career, it looked like, you know, in the short form that it would affect me. I spoke out a lot about racism, and I'm matriculated in very, for lack of better words, white spaces. I went to PWIs for undergrad, and I went to NYU for graduate school. And I mean, honestly, I was a musical theater performer who sang, danced, and acted. And that is a white industry. And so inside of that industry, I almost daily would either want to say something or build the courage to finally say something. And it was in a time, you know, where it wasn't as accepted. And so I lost a lot of opportunities because of it. But what I know is who I am today, the self that I've been able to build today, is based on the honesty and the courage that it took to take care of myself in that moment, if that makes sense.
Mm-hmm.
You know, like I personally believe that self-care is number one. I try to always include it in everything I do, because you have to be able to sustain happiness within yourself. And if you're not taking care of yourself, then you begin to rely on the things that you're pleasing to please you.
Mm-hmm.
And no one would ever be pleased with everything that you do.
Yeah. And that is a recipe for disaster, because I don't mean to speak for you, but I do really well with positive reinforcement. I love to hear, great job. Hey, that thing that you did, that was really awesome. Like, I love that. Damn. You know? Mm-hmm. Okay, good. And what I've noticed is in environments that take that away from me, because I don't like playing with, I pride myself in removing ego from the spaces that I step into and I create. Because what we do is about the other, but because I am a vessel of that happening, it has to come from me. So it's this weird boundary setting of, I am willing to put my ego aside, but am I willing to be put through the ringer? Am I willing to be put through mistreatment? How much of that can I take? And I feel in spaces in the theater industry, we put ourselves through that because we are so worried about the next gig, the next job, the callback, but really what's the most important is standing up for what's right and speaking out and creating safe environments.
Yes.
You know, I think we really are in this moment where the industry is hopefully changing in those ways. I think because of the multi-hyphenate, because of the art-trepreneur, the artist that is now engaging in a business mindset.
Mm-hmm.
And is creating and is constantly
providing themselves with work opportunities. We don't have to put ourselves, that's one of the positives and the pluses about being a multi-hyphenate, is that we don't have to put ourselves in abusive environments anymore.
Yeah, that's true. Because we are controlling the environment.
Exactly. We're the ones that are, we are the ones that are not only controlling the environments, but we're the ones that are creating the environments. It's again, like, it's interesting that you say control, because it's like control is such like a negative connotation, I think. We can control who gets to control the environments. Like, we could literally be like, hey, I have this, I'm producing this new project. I want your energy behind the lens. I want your energy in the room. I think that you're going to be able to help steer this project in a really positive and a really positive direction. I think control is so interesting. Like, I love collaboration. I feel the most artistic and the most present when I get to collaborate.
Mm-hmm.
How do you feel about collaboration? Because you have two mm-hmm. projects that we're going to talk about that you've created. And what is sort of your, do you like being more in control? Do you like being more the person that is the one that is sort of going, that is decision making, or do you like a collaborative environment?
That's such a textured question. Well, right. I guess it requires a textured answer, but I'll say this. I love collaboration, and I believe that collaboration is the birthplace for brilliance.
Mm-hmm.
Because when you include different perspectives and ideas and customs and traditions, then you're able to reach more people who have the different ideas and customs and traditions and, you know, perspectives. When it comes to me as a producer, as a creator, I do enjoy being in control, especially with certain stories. And when I say certain stories, I mean Black stories. And there's nothing more to, like, I believe that there has been a deficit of Black stories in a major way in all industries of media and most all other things. But in theater in particular, and also cinema, but theater is just, it is really like glaringly obvious that there's just a blatant neglect. And so when I created Riley, the musical, which is my musical that I hope to see on Broadway in the next 2 years, I'm really working hard. It's a musical about historical Black colleges and universities. And I think it's great. It's a comedy. The music's great. It's set in New Orleans. I think it's a beautiful story. But there is a, and I hope that I can speak freely here. There is
always,
I am someone who has studied Broadway up and down. Mm-hmm. I know it. I know the history. I love it. It is something that has been a part of my life for a long time. There was a lack of Black content, period, right, on Broadway, but a bunch of Black performers. And so then we were fighting for the four roles that we can get and fighting to be even in the shows that weren't about Black stories, just to have jobs and, you know, being excited about characters that were traditionally white being Black after 10 years of the shows running and just taking that as like a honor. And I'm like, this is bananas. But I was the one who was saying like, this is bananas. And so it looked different. It's like, why are you saying that? Like, you're ungrateful or you have a problem with everything. But here's the issue. The American history, and if we're telling stories of American history, we're telling stories of America, the people of America, it is deeply rooted in Blackness. And if we decide that we are not going to honor just a full part of American history, then that's disrespectful and also just inaccurate. And in addition to that, the reason why I said was, is because now we're seeing more shows with Black subject matter, but the care that is taken isn't at the place where it needs to be. And so we see them, but they're closing in 6 weeks.
Mm-hmm.
And it's a limited engagement to start because they know that people aren't going to come and see it. And so my goal, and I'm 30 years old, and so I feel like I have a few years to figure it out and to help people figure it out with it and not offend people and try my best. Mm-hmm. But my goal is for people to really understand that the same marketing that you use for Broadway with the audiences that have been welcome to Broadway forever, white audiences,
mm-hmm.
You cannot use for the you know, the things. And so just like Thoughts of a Color Man, a beautiful show. And I have friends in that show, but they struggled with, you know, and I'm not sure what their numbers were or anything like that, but they obviously struggled. It was a limited engagement to start because mm-hmm. they, you know, were working. But when it comes to cultivating the Black audience to a place where it is felt elitist to us, it is felt like we weren't, you know, accepted or invited, and there was nothing for us to see for so long. Mm-hmm. You can't just say, oh, we have a Black show, and I know it's a pandemic, but come and see it because Black Lives Matter just happened and we want to make money. That'll never happen. It's not going to work.
Mm-hmm.
And so what needs to happen on Broadway is the right people who understand the insides of the Black community to come and bring the shows there. And so I believe that I've been blessed and privileged with an opportunity to be able to be on both sides. I grew up in inner city, low socioeconomic Black communities, but then I ended up being in the Broadway world. I went into going to Tisch School of the Arts. And so to be a part of both communities and to tell a Black story, it needs to be rooted in the truth. If you really want to get the people to come to the shows, you have to give them the show that they feel represented and they feel welcome to see. And so my leadership, my control, my creation literally comes from necessity, not because I'm like, oh, I'm going to wake up today and I want to, I'm like, why is this story not being told? But everyone is taking from this culture. We see Beyonce doing the homecoming Coachella, and it was full on HBCU, which is historically Black college university. And we see Lizzo doing her things, and we see everybody doing these things, using Lil Nas X has the song, and his it's HBCU based, and all of the world loves this music, right? This is not just music for Black people. These are Black people presenting this to a mainstream audience who loves the songs and they love the dances and they want to do the things, but they don't even know the origin, you know, the origin of it. And the origin comes from schools that were built in a time where Black people couldn't go to schools with white people, you know? And I think that's important to understand the origin, because it, before it becomes mainstream and it's just something that we're all doing and no one knows what it is. No one understands the sacrifice. No one understands the struggle that went into, the hurt and the pain that went into the things that we love so much on TikTok today. Mm-hmm. So, yeah, that was a long one. But yes, I love collaboration. I think that the big people on Broadway, the big, you know, white and other producers should look into collaborating to make these Black shows great and to get the audiences out so that we can have a hit, like a hit Black show. We haven't had that in a long time. We're ready for a hit.
Brian, thank you so much for that. We're going to take a second to hear words from our sponsors, and we'll be right back.
Praised by Lin-Manuel Miranda as the future of musical theater, SUFS creator Shayna Taub makes Broadway history as only the second woman to write the book, music, lyrics, and star in her own original new musical. Don't miss the much-anticipated Broadway debut of the singular artist that Forbes calls visionary and Billboard anoints as one of the most inventive voices in musical theater. SUFS, the original new musical from Shayna Taub, is now playing on Broadway at the Music Box Theater. Get your tickets today at SUFSmusical.com. The Outsiders on Broadway tells the story of finding where you belong when the world refuses to accept you. Based on Essie Hinton's beloved novel, featuring new music from Jamestown Revival and Justin Levine, and directed by Danya Taymor, Entertainment Weekly says that with brilliant staging and some of the most captivating stage fighting currently on Broadway, The Outsiders has the power to inspire an entire generation. Get your tickets today at OutsidersMusical.com.
And we're back. So I love what you just said. It's these are the conversations that we have to be having. And something that I've found in talking with the Black community, BIPOC community, is that also Black joy is missing.
Yeah.
Is that so much of the producers are profiting off of Black trauma. And and I think that is a really interesting thing that we just, that's why I love Chicken and Biscuits. I love Doug Lyons' Chicken and Biscuits, because it was predominantly about Black joy and a slice of life in the Black American's life, something that I have never experienced before. And I was able to just sit down and enjoy this moment of something that I could laugh along with, cry along with, and where I feel like the Black artist was not exploited for the sake of the white audience to enjoy the show.
Oh my, that's good. And also how long did that one stay open though?
Oh honey, they had to close for two performances, and that was enough to set their closing date. I think it's ridiculous. And it's like, but we also can't sit here and go, the Lion King's on Broadway and has lasted for so long. It's like, well, the your face. It's like, you know,
the Lion King is a story about animals.
Yeah.
It is a story about animals made famous by Disney.
Exactly. Exactly.
And also the Lion King can stand to miss two performances.
Exactly. We need to have more joyful stories. And, you know, the perspective I can share is, you know, Jewish stories is that I constantly see as well. It's always stories about the Holocaust. It's always stories about, you know, Jewish grief and things like that. And when there is a comedy, it is so stereotypical and it's so surfaced and it's so just it's relatable to a point of like, oh, my grandma's best friend talks like that. But
no one else in my life obviously there's a similarity there. I think though there is an enjoyment that comes from period pieces for whatever reason to white people, and also like slavery and like Holocaust and like any kind of like struggle, and even like post slavery, like, you know, right after the Civil War is like a popular thing right now. Like I just read for a film and they're loving that thing where the slaves thought they weren't slaves anymore, but they really were, kind of that thing. They love that one. And to me, it is a way to hold on to a place of privilege for the majority and to only talk about the stories that portray Black people, because that's what I will speak to, in the light of lesser. And because it's so hard, like even when you look at like The Color Purple, that did well. I think that was probably like the last Black cast show to do well, and that was a revival. So even before that, the one before that one was The Color Purple, which sucks because it was just the original cast. But we cannot, and that was a story about the 1800s, well, you know, early 1900s. And it's just poverty, slavery, rape, and you got a Tony. And it's scary.
That is scary. It's exploitation. That's what it is. It's all exploitation. And it's like, even the show, like the, I'm watching The Gilded Age right now. And it's, I mean, where there's another episode that was just released today. It's out on every Monday and I'm thoroughly enjoying it. The acting is amazing. The acting is wonderful, but it's, you know, we're in, it's what'd you say?
Are there any black people at all? I saw a preview and I didn't see one.
Yep, it's Janae Benton and Audra McDonald, but we...
Well, Audra, didn't know that.
Yeah, and we thought for a second that it was maybe going to be... had nothing to do with race, and that it was actually going to be whatever inclusive means in that setting.
That word.
You know, right, yeah. Which that word is, you know, it's what, yeah. What is that? What is, yeah. What is equitability? What is inclusivity? What is that? But no, it's, you know, it's another storyline about how the black girl has good penmanship. And so she's hired by Christine Baranski's character and she gets to have a job and things like that. And it's like, do we need that again? One more time.
But it's also just like the way that, as a black actor, it's the way that we've been groomed to appreciate like roles. It's just like, because the truth is, I'm sitting here saying that I would love to be that black girl who had good penmanship on The Gilded Age right now. You know what I mean? Like, and we've been groomed to just be excited about those things. That's what I'm talking about, man. We fight. Those are the roles that we're fighting over.
Wow. And you know what's interesting is that these struggles, these identity, these questions about people's identity and like where they fit in stories. I'm a headshot photographer in the city, and it bleeds into the studio a lot because I have this in my welcome packet, but I say I will not entertain any questions of photographing ethnic ambiguity, because I have clients that will be like, I just need something that says like could be Jewish, could be Latinx. And I'm like, well, no. Period. So huh. You know, I just feel like it's, I don't know, I feel like no one is listening, but also no one knows what to do. And the people that are speaking out, the ones that are actually, you know, taking, unfortunately, the risk to fight for what is right, are the ones that are, you know, being, I don't know if shamed is the right way, but based on what you said in your experience, being told you should be grateful, you should be doing this,
yes,
you should be that.
Like, it's shamed, yep. Taunted and placed aside. It's so many different words that could be used. It's a tough road, man. It's a tough road to feel like who you are without choosing, without, you know, just who you were born to be is just not enough. Yeah. And whenever you speak about equality or just wanting to be treated kindly or get the same opportunity, then that's looked at as like complaining. So many things, man, have the potential to be the change, and it won't pull from anyone else. And I think that sometimes, because things have gone on so long a certain way, that there's a fear of things changing and things being taken away from the people who have had it.
Mm-hmm. Oh, yeah.
For so long.
Of course.
And I wish that I could assure the people that we don't want what you have. We have what we have. We would just want to be able to tell our stories to our people who spend their money on your things. And also we want you, if you want to take the opportunity to tell a black story, at least do us the honor of doing the work to present it correctly. Because in my life, to be able to be trained as an actor and to be trained as a singer and a dancer, I had to study very Western Europeanized styles of theater. I've trained in Shakespeare and I have not done Shakespeare in 10 years. Mm-hmm. But there's, my training is, I've trained more in Shakespeare than anything else. Okay. I've trained ballet and I've trained all the classical training when it comes to voice. And those are things that we have to learn to be able to compete with other people. When I say HBCU, when I talk about certain things, most white people don't even know what it means because they don't have to know. And so in the diaspora of African people coming to America in the slave trade, from then until now, the amount of experiences and the amount of sophistication that has happened without any assistance, without any help, is a story that could be told forever. There are so many stories that could be told from the, and not just about the horrible time where we were stolen away from our homeland and, you know, brought here and, you know, forced to live in poverty and raped and lynched and murdered. Like, it's, we got it. And there's so many other stories to tell. They're beautiful stories in the same places, beautiful stories of triumph and beautiful stories of overcoming, beautiful stories of love and education and creation of beautiful music. Most all music comes from us, like Black people. Like, it's just those beautiful stories that have just been sitting away and thrown away. It is my life's mission to be able to be the catalyst of those stories being not only told, but told in the right way, like with integrity, with the correct quality, you know, and done well, and just not just thrown together and thrown up to say that we have something. Because I've seen some Black shows on Broadway. I've done a lot of Broadway stuff. I think I've, this year alone, I've seen everything. Like, I've seen so many shows, and I'm looking at a lot of the Black ones like, what is this?
Yeah,
you know, it's just, it's a lot of craziness happening. And I know that we're better than that, but I think that in this time where Black is trendy, I think that people are feeling like, those who are not Black feel like Black is enough. And so if it's Black, let's just do it, instead of giving it the same care that you would give something that you know inherently, right? Doing the work to care about something in the same way that you care about the things that you already know is what I want people to do, like we have had to do. I've had to care so much about things that I didn't know inherently. When I started school in New York, I'm from New Orleans, Louisiana. I had a very heavy accent, and I went to a speech pathologist 3 times a week to develop a standard American accent. Now, what does standard American mean? You know what I mean? Like, those things. And now people are like, where are you from? And I'm like, New Orleans. Like, oh, you don't sound like it, because people love the New Orleans accent, but I've lost it because I was assimilated, and so that I could compete and succeed. And of course, like, one would say, oh, you've been on a show for 4 seasons, which that's a blessing, and sure. But I could have gotten on this show with my accent.
Right.
It's the Blackest show in the world. You know what I mean? And so it's like, there's just a long line of just all kinds of things. And I'll be talking all day, Kushner, so I'm going to stop now.
I want to hear everything you have to say. You know, one question that we're talking about, this time and Black is trendy, which I think is that you said that and literally chills ran down my spine. But what do you think the future is going to look back at this specific time period and say?
Well, there'll be different views, right? There'll be the view of what the history books will tell people it was.
True.
How revolutionary it was and how beautiful it was and freeing it was for people. And then there'll be the view of the people who will be told the truth, and the true stories will be passed down through the generations, just as we have the stories that are passed down from the civil rights era. And we are taught to believe that it was one thing, and some of us know that it's something different. Obviously it's something different because of what's currently happening now. Like, obviously it wasn't so revolutionary, because if it was, we wouldn't be dealing with the issues that we deal with now. But I believe that in the future, people will look at this as a renaissance. Renaissance that was incited by the courageous, will be words that will be used, but it also be violence. And people who, you know, stood up in this time, in this, I call it a racial pandemic. In this racial pandemic, the people who stood up, I've done, you know, some marches, and I've done the things. They will paint some of us as courageous people. They will paint others of us as violent. And they will say that this war on racism incited a renaissance in so many different areas. And, you know, with the people who are getting these promotions and the people who are getting these top level positions or positions that look like top level, the you know, African-American female vice president that we just got. We'll see those things in history books. We'll see, you know, because of this racial pandemic, these beautiful things happen. Mm-hmm. I think that that's the narrative that will be painted if, you know, history serves us correctly. That's what will be painted. It will be painted that people fought for equality and they got it. You know, like, that's what it'll look like.
And then there's going to be another sleeper period where there's going to be bottled up energy and microaggression and all those things, and we're going to have another period of
until the end of time.
It's so wild.
It'll just continue to go. It'll just continue. It just takes a radical enough group, because it kind of skips generations. Mm-hmm. And so it just take a radical enough group to realize that this is bullshit. It's like, you're lying. It's a lie. Mm-hmm. You know, and I think that's what happened with us. It's like, how many, literally, like, I'm like, I am someone who, I'm kind of a nerd. And so if I love something, I study it up and down. And when I was in grad school, my subject matter was Black theater at large. But it ended up being Black music theater. And then I realized that the amount of all African-American shows that had lived on Broadway since its inception. And I believe at that point, it was only like eight. Eight.
Yeah.
And I think that eight may be generous. I'm not sure. This was in 2013.
I'm genuinely thinking of Bubbly Brown Sugar, Ain't Misbehavin'. Yep.
Cabin in the Sky,
Raisin,
The Color Purple, Dream Girls,
The Wiz,
Bringing the Noise, Bringing the Funk. So Shuffle Along, just a history theme, because mm-hmm. I'm a nerd. Shuffle Along will be included in that eight. It's the eighth one, because Shuffle Along was a show that was a revival.
Right.
Audra did a revival. Right. So it lived early on, but it's just crazy. Those are the ones.
Yeah. Yeah.
And of those, the longest running run was The Wiz, mm-hmm. and it ran for 4 years. Mm-hmm. How long is Chicago run?
Oh my God.
You know what I mean? Like, how long? And it's just like, that is a, but then you have like the person who's won the most Tonys is who?
Audra.
And she's a Black woman. And so in the scheme of things, this Black woman who has won all these Tonys, but there's only eight shows that has been all Black, it does not make any sense. It doesn't make any sense. And then you think about the producers and how Black people haven't ever produced anything until this year, mm-hmm. you know, not fully produced, you know, until this year. And it's like, how difficult it is to produce on Broadway, how difficult it is to get the subject matter on Broadway. And I'm learning now, like, I'm dealing with how difficult it is now.
Yeah.
Like, no matter if you're on TV, no matter if you have a file, like, it doesn't matter. It is a society.
Yeah.
But I won't stop until it happens for me. So,
and it's a gentleman's club also. It's, you know, just getting investors. It's what's so wild to me is that there are people around this industry that will spend $25,000 on bottle service, but they won't spend $25,000 investing in a unit in a Broadway show.
Hmm.
And that's what gets me, is that I'm literally just, you would rather spend $25,000 in one night than get a new, fresh musical to Broadway. With a perspective that we've never seen before.
Yeah. It's also, though, when it comes to that kind of thing, I just have to take it out of my mind, because I cannot understand someone who does not care about art.
Yeah.
Enough that they would pay for bottle service and not that. Like, I cannot, it's really hard for me to understand. And it makes me crazy, because I understand, and I also just have eyes, and I understand the effects on art the effects of art, I'm sorry, on the community and the culture at large, and how art is the only way that we've gotten by with anything.
I completely agree with you. And, you know, in creating our own spaces as us multi-hyphenates, we do. You have two projects that you've been working on. One is Riley, which we've talked a little bit about. And Riley is a compelling musical drama comedy which follows six young students through their collegiate matriculation at a historical public Black school in the Bayou. After the freshman class of 2020 enter these university halls, it will never be the same. Mm-hmm. As if getting through school isn't hard enough, these six friends must make it through life. Each of them from different backgrounds, regions, and different races, all here at one place for one purpose. So tell me about the process of writing the show. We tapped into it a little bit, but I want to know why, and I want to know how, and I want to know what's to come.
Yeah. So, Riley is my babe. It's the first thing I ever wrote. I started writing it in 2017, and it initially started off just like a play is what it was. And then it became a film, and then it went back to a play. And then I kept feeling like things were missing. Conventions were missing, and then it was overwritten. So then I had to take things away. But what was missing truly was the music. There was something musical about the Black college experience, the Black experience at large. There's something musical about everything we do. The rhythm that we, our soul, our step, the way that we speak, it's just rhythmic.
Love it.
We are rhythm. We are, and our heartbeat is percussion. That's what I always say. And when I added the music and I wrote the show in my favorite, you know, style of music theater, which is recitative, I knew that I had like a monster on my hand, man. It deals with just a little bit about the show. It deals with a similar experience to mine in high school, where a Black football player was awarded a scholarship to go to a predominantly white high school, private school, very large school, because he was a great football player. Mm-hmm. He gets a white girlfriend and he decides that, you know, she and her family decides that wherever he goes to college, because everybody's trying to recruit him, that she'd go to, she's like along for the ride. Mm-hmm. Of course, we see that happen all the time. And doesn't quite work out that well because he decides to go to a small Black school instead of the big, you know, the big LSUs, the big Notre Dames, the, you know, big Alabama. And of course, the problems that come after that are crazy. He goes to the school and then she goes to the school. Like she shows up. It's a whole thing. And so the story deals with how this Black school matures everyone. It because we all grow in college. We go to college, we learn so much, but the traditions and the customs and the ideas that were founded and developed at these Black schools based on one of the only places that whiteness wasn't required for success in the Black community. There and obviously they have their issues, like the funding for Black schools today is awful in America, like awful, and they really, really struggle because of it. But the pride and the even the structure is so different. Like it's so different than the other schools. It's just a very special place. And I want people to see that. I want people to experience that. And because there's a pride about going to a Black college and finishing at a Black college that is unrivaled. I mean, even down to the, you know, there's a girl who was on a dance team there. And we study that. We see the dance team and the techniques that they do on the Black college dance teams and the marching band. And the cheerleaders are different. They're just different. They have it's a different vibe. And the music and the student government and the homecoming, like it's just all totally different. And it's also in New Orleans. And so it has that jazz.
Love it.
Being all over it. And I think it's a beautiful story. And I can't wait. It'll be on Broadway and it will sweep the Tonys. Remember that. Remember that. Record this.
Hey, I already see when the Tony nominations come out, we're going to do an audiogram on my Instagram being like, you heard it here first, folks.
Exactly. Like, exactly. And you won't have to wait long for it either. I'm pushing for it, man. I'm killing myself. I'm pushing for it. So I'm excited about Riley. Very, very excited about Riley.
I love that. Which you mentioned earlier is not a real college, but it is.
It is a college
in the story.
Yep. I created the college, and Riley is my grandmother, who's my best friend, her maiden name.
Oh, I love that. That's beautiful. I totally understand about tight relationships with your grandparents. My grandma's my best friend as well. So I understand that. And then you also have Georgia Sky, which is a new film produced and written and starring you. And in Georgia Sky, Levi, Ryan, and Tamika, three childhood friends, reunite in their hometown for one purpose. Or so they think. Soon they all realize that their true purpose is simply home.
Yeah. Georgia Sky is a musical film as well. I wrote music for that.
Cool.
I'm a song and dance man, so many of the things that I do will have music and like I'm that guy, but Georgia Sky is set in Atlanta, and it's about three friends who are dealing with gentrification, actually, because that is a thing here. I just bought a home in Atlanta, and that is what incited like the story to be written. And there's a community center near my home, and my home is new, but my home is the only new home in my development. This development has been for a long time, and I see the people leaving, and I see the new homes being like, I see like the preparations. I'm watching it happen. And so I thought about a story about a community center, because there's a community center nearby and it seems like there's nothing happening there. And so what I dream about is like, what did this community center look like 30 years ago? And so this story is about three friends who have grown up in a community center, but then they left, they went to their different places. And then when they come back, they're only coming back because the community center is being threatened of being like shut down and turned to something else. They realize that like one of the friends has something to do with it. Like she's gone and become a lawyer. And so she's like working with the people. It's just it's a beautiful story about love and friendship. And it's a happy ending. It's a cute little holiday story, but the subject matter is always going to be something real for me. And so Georgia Sky is just about, you know, there's a lyric that says, and you can't forget where you learn how to fly. When you look up at the sky, the little child within you won't let you lose the sight of where you dreamt your first dreams every night. Mm. So it's just about never forgetting like how important home is and what home truly is. And I just love stories about the heart, like stories that come from the heart, meaning like from the experiences. And so most things that I write, even because I've like set this new goal of like writing a short and a pilot, at least one short and one pilot every month this year. It's like my New Year's thing.
That's awesome.
It's a lot. And so please know today is the 31st and I'm not finished. And so, you know, when it comes to the stories that I write, they all come from just experiences that I could write forever about the life that I lived. And I'm only 30, which is just proof that there's so many stories to be told that are not being told.
And I find that to be interesting. I find a lot of people don't want to tell stories. I'm like, I'll meet with people and I'm just like, you know, they want to pick my brain about being a multi-hyphenate. And I'm like, you can do it. You can do it too. Just, you all have perspective. Just start writing. And I met with a lot of people that don't want to do it. They want to be told what to do, where to stand, all that good stuff. And I'm like, that's cool, but what are you going to do in between? You know,
Kushner, what I've learned is that everybody, the reason why multi-hyphenation is something that is so special is because it's just not something that everyone can do.
It's true. It's true. I think everyone can do it, but
it's not a skill thing. Yeah. It's not about skill. It's about heart.
It's about heart.
And mind.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. And I think it sort of cracked the code as to finding success in this industry. And it's something that has been an oppressed idea in this industry for so long. If you do anything else other than your craft, you are not a real actor. If you think about, if you think about anything else, then you're not this, then you're not that. You, back in my day, we didn't do that. You only auditioned and you sang and then you went on to the next show. We didn't do any of this producing. It's like, well, we do now. We do now.
Because why not? And who better to produce a show than a showman?
Exactly.
I think that there's also like the notion or this like myth of performers not being able to do anything but.
And also there's, you know, there's failure. I have a lot of people that are like, I don't even know where to start. Like, start small, start with an idea, create a team, talk it out with people that you've always wanted to collaborate with. Just do TikToks and Instagram posts and write things out. Just start, throw it out there. See who follows you. It doesn't, you do not have to start out writing the next great American musical. You do not have to start that way. Just see what, see how you like telling stories and see how it can grow. And that is a huge key in multi-hyphenating. You do not have to start big. You can start small. Brian Jordan Jr., you have been an absolute pleasure to talk with today, and I look forward to collaborating with you again soon. Where can we find you on social media?
All my handles are Brian Jordan Jr. That's on Twitter and Instagram and TikTok, which I have one TikTok video. I should do better. It's stressful.
Stresses me out. Stressful.
At Brian Jordan Jr. on everything. It's been great, man. Thank you so much for having me. I've truly enjoyed myself.
Of course, you're amazing. And thanks everyone for listening. Thank you to Patrick, who's engineering this episode. Thanks to Alan and Dory and Katie and Yo. You're all fantastic. Please follow Dear Multi-Hyphenate on Instagram at Dear Multi-Hyphenate or my personal Instagram account at The Michael Kushner, and subscribe, download, tell your friends, all that good stuff. And if you want to be on the show or you just want to ask a question, you can email me at DearMultiHyphenate@gmail.com or submit on my website at www.DearMultiHyphenate.com. Brian Jordan Jr., you're incredible. Thank you, everyone. Have a great day.
They say well-behaved women seldom make history. Just ask the Supps. A vibrant and wholly original new musical, Supps celebrates the real women who changed history and their story that is more timely than ever. See the show Variety calls an epic tour de force new musical. Deadline Cheers is a rare Broadway feat and leaves audiences inspired to keep marching. Supps has arrived on Broadway and not a moment too soon. Get your tickets today at suppsmusical.com. If you love Broadway gossip, you are not going to want to miss any episode of this podcast, Singular Sensation, The Triumph of Broadway. Plenty of dramas unfold on stage, but the best dramas unfold backstage. And there were no bigger dramas than behind the scenes of Sunset Boulevard.
So you were being crucified over here, but not there.
No. No, because I was turning in a performance that would get standing ovations. Excuse me.
So check out my podcast, Singular Sensation, for all the juicy and gory details of Sunset Boulevard.